Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hello, fans and listeners. Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez here, your host of the podcast, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition. I'm here today with Bailey Kowalczyk. She is a professional trail runner for Nike Trail based out of Boulder, Colorado. She has run competitively her entire life, although what this looks like has shifted drastically over the years. As an NCAA Division I athlete, she found herself in an incredibly toxic environment. The environment combined with her own genetics and personality created the perfect storm for anorexia. Anorexia ripped Bailey from the sport, and at a time she thought she might never compete again. Her professional career has been full of lessons and reminders that her health matters most, and running on gratitude is the answer for Bailey right now. Bailey is not defined by her eating disorder, but rather the lessons it allowed her to learn along her recovery journey. Bailey, thank you so much for being an open book about your recovery journey and things that you went through and are going through. And also, of course, as we're going to get to, being an inspiration and role model in the sport of running, because you're finding much success there. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've heard so much about you. I've listened to your podcast for so long. It's so great. And it's such an honor to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. It is, once you kind of dive into, I don't know if it's a small athletic world, or definitely because I myself do tend, you know, I love running. I love all sports, but I do love running. And so like, it tends to somehow get to be this small world, and we have some connections. Your roommate has been on the podcast before, Callie Swiker. She's an amazing female athlete, Spartan Pro racer. And so it is funny how the world becomes, the world is way too big, but it becomes small when we get into the niche of female athletes and female athlete nutrition.
Such a tight circle. It's really funny. I feel like there's so many little connections here and there, and it's just a matter of time before we cross paths. So I'm glad that we could.
It is. One of the things I always feel like personally right now for me is I'm like, man, between the pandemic and then this personal time in my life, I had a baby just over a year ago and I'm having another one. Like, I haven't been.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. So I haven't been able to travel and like get to races and things like that. So there's been so many people on this podcast throughout the last few years. And I'm like, I can't believe I haven't met you in person yet, but it's kind of just a bad time in my life.
Yeah, for sure. That's a big time. And that's amazing for you. I think that's such a celebration. But yeah, I'd love to meet in person someday when the timing's right. I know COVID kind of threw a wrench in everything, so I feel like half of my friends have become virtual, but that's okay.
I know. Well, let's jump right into it. And I'm going to ask you a hard question first.
Oh, boy. Okay.
But you set me up for it with the bio that you sent to me. You said you're not defined by your eating disorder, but rather by the lessons you've learned along your recovery journey. And so my big question for you is, what are some of those lessons? We're going to jump right into it. If you could narrow down one, two, or I don't know, however many major lessons that you've learned along your recovery from anorexia that you do feel like, you know, kind of I don't want to say define you, because what does define a person anyways? Like, that's a thousand things, but like, are really impactful to you in your life right now?
Yeah, I that's a great first question. It's a good way to put me on the spot early. It's interesting because I feel like, you know, I learned so much. I'm a completely different person in some ways than I was 3 years ago, but in other ways at my core, I'm the same. And I'd say the biggest lesson that I learned is to be grateful for everything that my body does for me. And I think, you know, showing up to start lines this year, just in the running world, showing up to start lines this year in a grateful mindset, happy to be there, excited to race, instead of this, you know, what's going to happen? Am I going to win? Am I going to be on the podium? You know, that I think just saved my life. Just being grateful for everything along the way and allowing myself to celebrate small wins instead of getting caught up in every small detail of life. I think that's a big takeaway from this journey. I think it's kind of hard to put into words all of the things that I've learned, but another is that life is not black and white. And I am still learning that. That's something that's been really hard for me. I think my life has always been in kind of boxes. Like, I've always put myself in boxes, and it's either this end of the spectrum or it's that end of the spectrum. I'm either healthy or I'm not. I'm good or I'm not. I'm, you know, you name it. And I think taking myself out of those black and white boxes and allowing myself to find this gray area of life and be okay with the things that come and go. And that's been just amazing. For one, it's relieved a ton of stress. It's allowed me to explore different passions, and it's allowed me to be more than a one-dimensional person, a one-dimensional athlete. And I think that's something that's really come from this journey. And then there's just the little things from recovery, like enjoying food with people, enjoying social situations, and going out to meals with people and cooking with people and experiencing different cultures and traveling the world and not, you know, making the same dinner that I make at home and being able to experience that culture and all of that. That's something that, you know, old me would have never done. And new me, I'd say, is just embracing that, embracing like all of the different challenges that life has. And it's just a lot more exciting this way.
Absolutely. I love all of that. I kind of want to dig into some of it more, but, you know, showing up being with gratitude, recognizing life isn't black and white, and then just enjoying food and all that it brings from like a more like social standpoint, just the enjoyment of it. And I think what's really interesting about those three things is like, okay, your biggest lessons learned along recovery isn't I need X amount of calories, or, you know, like, it's not even about the food. It's about being present, not being black and white, and being grateful. And I think what's amazing about that too is that has healed you in many ways from this eating disorder diagnosis, but it's also just things that I think up-level your life like that. Just, and that's why you said it's like, okay, I know at my core I'm still the same person, and yet I'm totally not, because you can apply gratitude and the importance of gratefulness not just to food in your body, but to everything in your life, right? And that's why it's such this transformation of like, whoa, I'm so different than I was a few years ago.
Right. And something for me, you know, it took a really long time to realize that it's not about the food. You know, last year I went through this anorexia relapse. And so this wasn't the first time that I had dealt with this, but this was the first time that I did the hard work required to understand why this was happening. And so for me, that was kind of a game changer. That was a huge game changer. And it taught me a lot about like, there's the eating sort of serves more purposes than, you know, what am I putting in my body? What do I look like? Like, it's not that surface level. It's a lot deeper than that. And I'm really proud of being able to dig deep and find why that eating disorder was quote unquote serving me, even though it really wasn't. And to be able to fill those gaps with more meaningful things that bring me health and joy is much better.
Yeah. And I appreciate your honesty about going through a more recent relapse. And I think though, what you just highlighted though, is that it's like, well, every time, because I do want people to be hopeful that like a full recovery is possible, but But we might have our ups and downs, and we might even use the word relapse. But when you go through it, you learn something different. If you at least have a growth mindset, I should have a caveat there. If you have a growth mindset, you should learn something different or be able to dig deeper or uncover one more, you know, layer of the onion, as the saying goes, right? That allows you to like actually get further in your journey. And it sounds like, you know, as much as we don't want people to relapse and things like that, it almost sounds like that was kind of last year as that happened, allowed you to go even deeper that you needed to in this journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, you know, I really don't think relapse does not have to happen to everybody. You know, it doesn't have to be part of the story. And for me, unfortunately, it did have to be part of the story because I think I just wasn't in the mental space to really fully recover the first time. And I think if you dig deep and understand that this is going to be a process and a wave. And for me, it was that black and white thinking that caught me. It was, you know, I'm either on the top of the mountain or I'm down under the earth somewhere. And it doesn't have to be like that, you know. And right now there are moments where I'm down and I'm not like feeling my best and I'm not loving my body. But instead of turning into this full blown, like, I'm going to listen to those thoughts and act on them. It's just, okay, I acknowledge that that's not a thought that I should be listening to. And that's not the healthiest thought. And I'm going to move on and it'll go away. And I think that that's where, you know, I challenge anybody that's going through this process, anybody that's in recovery, you know, acknowledge those thoughts and challenge those thoughts and allow yourself to grow from that. And it doesn't have to be peaks and valleys, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And something I'm reminding people of all the time is like a thought. We have so many thousands of thoughts a day, right? Like it doesn't have to, we don't have to act on it. We don't even have to believe it. It's not even inherently true. Like I don't want people to jump into my head and think about and see the things I think about all day long, right? Like, like it's not even necessarily the truth or reality, right? So it's remembering that even with those disordered thoughts of, hey, this might not even be true. I certainly don't have to act on it. And I can choose not to listen to it. Is it frustrating that the thought is still there sometimes? Yeah, it's frustrating and annoying, but it doesn't have to be what dictates your life. And that's certainly, you know, a really important thing to remember. So, all right, we jumped right into it, but let's backtrack a little bit now. You have been a runner for many, many years. I think you fell in love with it. I don't know. You tell me, when did you fall in love with running?
I fell in love with running at a very, very young age. I was somewhere around like first grade.
Oh, wow. And
yeah. So I played soccer growing up, like the Pee Wee League or whatever it is. And
yeah.
And I just was the kid that would run back and forth, whether I needed to or not. I would just run back and forth and back and forth. And that was kind of my life. There was not much organized running at the time, but I would run with my dad and my uncles, and I would love to race people on the playground, and everything was a race to me. Every single thing was a race, and not in an unhealthy way, just in a, like, I just love to move and I love to run, and it's where I felt the strongest. And, you know, I did a lot of different sports. I've been skiing since I was two, and we were hiking since I was walking, and I've lived most of my life outside, and that's been great. But once I had the opportunity to start racing, I think probably around fifth or sixth grade, which was quite early, I jumped on that, and I jumped in these little cross country races, and then that led to track. And before I knew it, I was a 3-season running athlete, and I guess the rest is history from there.
Yeah. And you did more like middle distance as far as track and field goes, right? Like 800.
Yes. 800, 1500 were kind of, I'd say kind of the box I put myself in. I really loved those distances, but it got to a point in college where, you know, I think I would have had success at a 3K or a 5K or even a 10K. But I had already put my blinders on and I was a middle distance runner, and there was no changing my mind. A 3K was too long, which the irony is not lost on me, but yeah, I was mostly 800, 1500 and sometimes even 400s.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that goes back to your old way of that black and white thinking of like, this is what I am. There's no way I can be something else. But also I'm just laughing. You're saying it at that time, 3K felt long. I'm like, I feel like when I was in high school, like I thought the mile was long, you know, like mile to me was like, oh my gosh, that's a distance event. And I mean, it is compared to the 100, but like, it's funny how as you get more into distance, it's like, wait, the mile's a really short race.
Exactly. Exactly. Now I'm like, wow, that's so anaerobic. And at the time, yes, the mile was because I ran 1500 and the 100 meters between 1500 and a mile was a serious deal to me. So yeah, it's just funny how times change so much and perspective changes. But
yeah, totally. And so, you know, getting back to nutrition a little bit, like as a youth and high school athlete, you know, knowing that anorexia did become a concern in college, was, you know, I'm just curious, did you have any thoughts with like nutrition or body at a younger age, or was it really the college environment that then kind of that journey started for you?
Yeah, it's quite bizarre to me. I've done a lot of kind of deep diving into this and kind of analyzing my past, and I action wise, I was really healthy. I ate a lot. I mean, obviously that's subjective, but you know, I really fueled myself well. And that was actually something, you know, going into college that I was very aware of. I was very aware that eating disorders were quite common in this sport. And when I was looking at college programs, that was something that I was trying to make sure that the teams had healthy atmospheres. And so I was very aware of it. And I felt like I fueled myself very, very well. The biggest thing with younger me was that I was very obsessed with eating clean, eating healthy, and I always ate enough, but it was just this, you know, I was labeled as the healthy one, the one that's, that's always eating healthy, the one that didn't eat dessert and, you know, was optimizing my performance. And I feel like I'm a very big people pleaser. And once I was labeled as that by, you know, family, and I don't blame anyone, but family, friends, everyone around me, it was like, I need to live up to that name and I need to be as clean and healthy as possible. And I just think that that obsession didn't set me up for success. While I wasn't restricting, it was just not the best relationship with food as far as labeling goes.
Yeah. I can really resonate with that personally. I think once I entered college and started studying nutrition, then whether it be, you know, family members, aunts, you know, friends being like, oh, you study nutrition, so you're healthy, right? And then there's that like additional pressure of, okay, then I need to model this.
Right.
I need to show this. I need to act it out. And I'm sure you and I are on the same page as what defines healthy. But now,
exactly.
You know, that I would say, you know, having a chocolate chip cookie is healthy. But at that time, I wasn't feeling that way. And a lot of society doesn't feel that way. And so it adds that extra layer of pressure and can kind of like, you know, what may have been just an interest of yours or something, you know, just in your personality, then when you have this like identity piece, you're feeling the pressure of keeping up this role, that can really add to it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think while to a lot of people in my life, that eating disorder came out of nowhere and it was like, but she fueled herself so well. And that was something that was really important to her. It's also like, I think it was just a storm that was brewing, given that I had already, the way I lived my life was in these black and white boxes. Mm-hmm. I'm either healthy or I'm not. I'm either thin or I'm not. And it's just, you know, while I would never wish an eating disorder on anyone, I think I'm a much wiser and better version of myself as a result.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level.
The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the fast track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Well, and that's a really interesting. Again, you open this conversation with saying like gratitude is a huge lesson that you've learned and embraced over the last few years. And it's like, even in a weird way of having gratitude for your eating disorder because of what it's taught you is an important thing. Again, you don't want to wish it on anybody, but it's like, wait, this, and we can, again, I would just want to say, you can apply this to other things in your life. Like it doesn't, as a female athlete, it doesn't have to be an eating disorder, but like if you have like this crushing loss or, you know, some sort of career ending injury, right? It's like this obstacle that's in front of you might actually be the thing that as you overcome it, like is something that betters you somehow. And that's really hard to know in the moment or believe in the moment that it's happening. But it also could be a little bit of like a glimmer of hope. Like I know during one of the hardest times in my life, I kept that in mind of like, okay, I'm not going to start writing a book about this right now, but I was like, but maybe someday I could like use my journey and my story to help other people, right? And that was like my motivation. I think you yourself, Bailey, are, you know, literally doing that right now as like even sharing right now is, you know, you kind of saying, okay, well, if I can help other people, then that's also my motivation to continue on this journey. Am I making sense?
Yeah. And I think for me, I really appreciate what you said about that. It doesn't have to be an eating disorder because it doesn't. And and like I said in the bio, it's not something that I want to define me, but anything that rips you from the sport or the life that you love and something that you're passionate about, I think that's an opportunity to grow from. And that's something to use as motivation and to be grateful for. And that's, yeah, I think for me, like having, that's something that's really helped me process, you know, if there's, because inevitably there's going to be downs and ups. And when I'm in those downs, that is motivation for me. It's like, you know, I know that this is something that's, that I can use for good in the future and that I can, as a coach to my athletes or as a professional athlete in the sport, I can help better the community and help someone else on their journey. And without any of these experiences, while I, you know, I don't love them in the moment, but without any of these experiences, I wouldn't have any of that wisdom to share with people going through something similar. And even though a lot of my athletes will have stories that I can't personally relate to, you know, like there's a lot of commonalities with drug addiction, alcohol abuse, and I don't have that personal experience. However, I do know that the brain chemistry is quite similar, and I do know how hard it is to get out of these cycles. And so it just allows me to have a huge understanding of humans in general and exactly, just have more empathy for people in that situation.
Yeah. And just the process of getting yourself, if we want to call it like out of this rock bottom situation, no matter what the situation is, it's like getting yourself out of that is something that, you know, people need help in a variety of ways in life. And so when you do overcome adversity yourself, that's something that you can bring to the table to help other people who are facing adversity. Yeah. So
exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what question I asked you, but I like where it went.
I think you asked when I started running. I don't know how that progressed, but that's very classic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and maybe even just getting at, you know, some things kind of inherent in your personality trait too. I think what I wanted to shift into, and I wanted to bring light to, you know, kind of, I suppose how the eating disorder itself kind of developed, because I think the more that we spread knowledge on this, the better, so that things like the environment and other people and other coaches can just be more educated on. Because like you said, it was like, well, in high school, like, sure, I was eating clean with air quotes around that. And maybe that was a red flag, but it really wasn't at that time anything that like was taking over your life. However, it was then almost like, it was almost the pressure and comments from other people. And there's no person to be blamed here per se, but it's, again, if the more we have these conversations, then the more awareness maybe the everyday person, even if they have no knowledge on eating disorders, like don't understand what that's like, you can just know, oh, maybe I shouldn't be labeling food as good or bad, or that person as the healthy person and that person as the unhealthy person, you know, like just kind of awareness of those words. And so what do you think in your collegiate journey as a track and field athlete, and cross-country athlete, like some of the pressures that you feel like kind of contributed, that were difficult for you to deal with, that contributed to the development of this?
Yeah. So I really appreciate that you say contributed, because I do. I really think that sharing this story is so important because it's so common for so many people. But I also want people to acknowledge that eating disorders are complicated and multifaceted, and mm-hmm. not, you know, that a coach can say something to 7 athletes and 4 of them are going to end up, you know, taking it and becoming really quite fixated on that comment. And the other 3 might be completely fine. So I just want to quick disclaimer, make sure that, you know, I'm not blaming anyone for my past, but I am saying that these comments and the toxicity in the NCAA track world did not, like, I think that it just was a catalyst for everything that happened. So for me, I was part of a program that was, it was a Division I program. It was quite intense, quite serious, which I did love. However, there was just a lot of competition, body competition within the athletes themselves, just body talk, body judgment between people about people's selves. And like, you know, I'm having a skinny day, I'm having a fat day, and just things that maybe aren't helpful for people that either are struggling or maybe susceptible to struggling. But that in combination with one-on-one meetings with coaching staff where they kind of sat us down, and it was meant to be kind of a goal setting meeting, and it quickly became one that was, okay, if you lose X amount of pounds, then you could be more successful, and you know, more successful looks like NCAA championships, this, that, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter what it looks like. But I think that it's easy to brush those comments off in the moment and be like, okay, that's ridiculous that they said that. Why would I ever change my body for sport? But I think subconsciously, like, it really sat heavy in my mind.
And oh, yeah.
I just wanted to be the best athlete that I could. And I also wanted to please these coaches that were getting all of these awards for being such great coaches. So I'm like, they know what they're doing. I need mm-hmm. to,
you trust
I need
it.
To follow that. Yeah. I need to trust them. And so I think it was kind of from all angles. It was that we didn't have the best team structure as far as healthy mindset, but we also didn't have the best leaders to help us with that mindset. And this is a bunch of kids, essentially 17 to 21. None of us know what we're doing. We shouldn't be in charge of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, me personally, as a coach to my clients and stuff, like, when I hear something like, oh, you can lose, if you lose 5 pounds, you'll be faster. Like, my literally in a quarter of a second, I'm just like, that's not true. You know, and I can just disregard it. But I'm like, okay, well, this is me working in this field, doing what I do for over 10 years now. Like, an 18-year-old is not going to have that same reaction.
Exactly.
They might not even have the knowledge to know that that's not true. You know, like, that's for, and it, so if they don't know that it's not true, and then they're trusting in this person, it's very easy for people to be susceptible. And whether it turns into an eating disorder or just you know, the pressure and the unhappiness or, you know, kind of resentment towards their body, all of those things are not good outcomes. So I think it's so important for one, education, to know what is really true or not, but then also to build up like your resiliency. And again, at a young age in high school and college, like we're just not going to be as resilient to comments like that because we don't have the knowledge or even the confidence to speak to somebody who's our superior or who we're supposed to be trusting in like that. So, and also too, like you said, there's this, you know, things innate in our personalities and stuff that maybe we're more susceptible. But also I think with that being said, looking at like, well, what's the population that we're dealing with here? A lot of NCAA athletes have similar personality traits of being super goal-driven, willing to do anything, so focused on winning that they'll do whatever it takes. And so it's like, we almost need to be, we should be cautious with everybody, but it's like, we almost need to be more cautious with people in a demographic that might have personality traits that are susceptible to these things.
Exactly. I agree. And, you know, I think I just wanted to trust them and I wanted to be the best. And I am living proof times two that losing that X amount of weight, you know, it doesn't matter what the number is, does not make you perform better. I think when I first started going down that path in college and I started losing weight, I had a few really good workouts. I did. And that was wonderful. But then it's like overnight, I had no energy. I had muscle cramps and couldn't recover between easy runs. And it went downhill so fast that it's like, okay, well, were those two good workouts worth it? Was that what they wanted? And so it's just interesting that we think that towing this line will, and maybe some bodies can handle that, but I definitely know that they shouldn't have to. And I've run the best results I've ever run in my life in, I'd say, the healthiest body I've ever had. And I would say heaviest, but that doesn't even matter. It's more that I feel healthy. I don't feel depleted. I'm happy. And am I always looking in the mirror and celebrating like, this is great. I love the way I look today. No, but that's okay. And that's part of the process. I think for all those young people listening, that the extra X amount of pounds lost does not get you results. Mm-hmm. It may get you a few months of good results, but then it'll be years of injury and burnout. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And to get back to the body image piece too, because like, even though we can all admit maybe we don't love our bodies every single day and that's okay, but also even sometimes on the path of losing weight, we think, well, at least I'll be happy with how I look. But the funny thing is, for most people, even that's not true.
Exactly. I was never happy. It was never enough. And nothing ever was good enough. There was always something with my body that was wrong. It was always like, well, maybe with just this little extra bit, I'll feel better. And then it just becomes this toxic spiral that, I'm always going to hate something about my body. And that's not, that is just not a good cycle. And it's never, you can be at your lowest weight. And I can tell you right now, you're not going to be happy. There's nothing. And it's funny because for me, it's like a control and a comfort thing. And you have no control when you're at that low point because I can't run. I can't do the things that I love. And you have no comfort either because you're constantly dizzy and unhappy. That's not.
And sore and just, injured and scared sometimes too of like.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 I know we use those words. So many people are like, oh, it's a control thing or it's comfort. And it's like, this is very uncomfortable. And like, you're completely out of control. I'm sorry that I'm laughing about it. But when you're on the other side of it, you see it so clearly.
Right. And that's where, I've done a lot of work with therapists and a dietitian. And
yeah,
we've kind of compared it to like the light switch turns off. And when the light switch in my brain turns off, it's like just crazy talk. Like none of it is rational. It makes no sense. And then they've told me that when the light switch turned on, it was like so obvious that I knew how irrational it was. And it's just a matter of getting to that point where you can turn the light switch on. And that's the hard work to get there. But once it turns on, it is magical.
And so just to share with listeners, like, what was a little bit of, you know, outline kind of that process of the hard work, working with a therapist, dietitian, like you said, like, can you, and actually, I am aware that you did step away from sport, correct?
Yeah.
And you said in, when you sent me over your bio that I read off, like, you truly didn't know if you would ever compete again. And I would love to talk about that, because as you said, you are living proof that you can be at a higher weight and be your healthiest self and run faster. And so you are running now, but there was a time where, no, we had to go through this process and you even had to step away from running.
Exactly. So at Clemson, just backing up to when I was in college, I was medically removed from school because health-wise, I wasn't medically removed by the coaches. It was by the healthcare team. I wasn't in a safe place to be running. And it was a huge liability, I think, to have me running, but they also cared about me being healthy. And so I was sent to an inpatient treatment center in Denver, Colorado, which is ultimately what led me to move here, which is kind of a blessing in disguise. But that was really tough. And I haven't talked about that experience much, because I feel like my true recovery was this last time when I kind of did it in my quote unquote real life. But I will mention that I did go to an inpatient center and they did save my life. And I think that was pivotal in what I needed at the time, but it was also demoralizing in a way, because I was told at the age of, I think I was 18 when I went there, I was told that running and recovery just didn't, they just didn't go together. I couldn't run, and they tracked my steps, everything. That's obvious when you're in a hospital. But once I got out, I had no idea what to do, because running had been my passion and my identity for so long. And they had told me that it wasn't possible with recovery. So again, I just trusted these people, and I had no idea what to do with my life. And I know that sounds dramatic. I had planned on going back to school and finishing up at CU Boulder, which I did do. But those 2 years, I did start working with a therapist and a dietitian, and they did allow me to start running, but it had no purpose. It was, it became this thing where I would run, like 4 miles a day on the little path next to my apartment, and I would run by the CU college cross country team, and then I would go home and cry. And I would be super upset about not being in that atmosphere, but also, did I want to be in that atmosphere? Because it kind of led me to this position. So there was a lot of resentment. There was a lot of anger towards running, but then there was also this just huge desire to get back out there and to rewrite my history with running, my being in the sport. And so that was really, really tough. That was one of the toughest parts of this process. And I think it was maybe 2017 for Christmas, my parents got me a membership to the Boulder Track Club, which is just like a yearly membership. You can show up to 2 practices a week in a long run. And just so it could, because I'd been telling them that I really want to join this community in Boulder and see if I could just run a few times a week with people and feel like I'm part of something bigger. Yeah. And that's kind of where my story with running restarted. Like, I started rewriting that story.
Yeah.
Thanks to Inside Tracker, I can get insights and feedback on my blood biomarkers whenever I want to. No more waiting for doctor's visits and them telling you, you're fine. Instead, you are in control of your health with Inside Tracker. For 20% off any of their products, blood biomarker testing, DNA kit, interage, head to InsideTracker.com and use the code RISEUP. Take your health into your own hands. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code Rise Up 20 for 20% off your first 4 months, plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode.
I love that you restarted it by joining the track club, the group, so that it wasn't just you on your own. You know, I just feel like that's for maybe people who have stepped away from sport and then are trying to get back into it or want to get back into it. I think taking that like social aspect just sounds like a really healthy thing, whether it's built in accountability or just, you know, removing the internal talk and having real live external conversations as you're doing your sport and stuff, I think could be a really healthy reintroduction.
Yeah, I really wanted it to, because I know I had heard so many horror stories about exercise being used as kind of a form of, and I don't know the correct verbiage, but a form of like purging almost. It's like, okay, I'm going to go exercise. Yeah, I'm going to go exercise and burn calories. And that's never what running was for me. And so I didn't want to start running again and have it become really, really compulsive. And that's where joining the track club was very, very helpful. I was around really healthy individuals, and it just allowed me to dip my toes in the water without jumping in the deep end again. And it's exactly what I needed at the time. Yeah, it was just perfect timing for me.
Yeah. And I do want to backtrack and highlight something you said about impatient. Maybe this was a very difficult time in your life, and maybe you feel like you did better per se with recovery more recently. However, I think, again, expressing that gratitude, that'll be the theme of our conversation today. It's like there's a time and a place for that sort of treatment. And what I do as a dietitian helping with disordered eating and some eating disorders in the outpatient setting, like there's some people that I'm like, you need a treatment center. That is the life-saving, like that's the initial step. And sometimes it does break you down. I really do know. I do need to be transparent. I've never gone through that process myself, but I hear from many clients and conversations I have, like, honestly, how much like an inpatient or a very intensive partial hospitalization program can really break somebody down. But it's like, sometimes you need that in order to build yourself up again. And maybe if you did it your own way the first time around, you wouldn't have gotten the same results that you actually did the second time around, you know?
Yeah. And I needed that so badly. So yeah. I totally agree. I think for me, it provided me with a lot of knowledge just about what this was serving in my life. And because when I went into the inpatient, I was like, this is silly. This is all about the food. And like, it was just very one-dimensional in my mind. It didn't, you know, I wasn't thinking about what purpose this was serving. I wasn't thinking about anything from the past, anything from my childhood, anything from, you know, I just wasn't processing anything. And I didn't understand eating disorders at all besides my personal experience and this anger that I was being, you know, quote unquote, sent away. And I think that it definitely was necessary and it taught me a lot. I wish that there was a little bit more understanding of, you know, running being able to be a possibility in the future. And
yeah,
I think if I had tried to go through that process alone the first time, it wouldn't have been successful. And I think I would have gone through a really, really long period of quasi recovery, which you just can't have a piece of your eating disorder and try to live a fulfilling life.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that quasi-recovery period is sometimes very hard for people to get out of. So,
yeah.
And that's why I do believe that treatment centers are like are needed, because it's like this could be what helps really push you along faster. And then just for people listening, there are some treatment centers that do have some sort of athletic focus, like the Victory Program or Opal, and maybe there's some more too, but I'll just give those two a little shout out.
for the time being.
Yes. And I know, I think ED care is another one that I know some professional athletes have gone to. So I do, and I was looking into these last year. So that's, I'm very familiar with them. But I think for me, having that experience at the inpatient recovery center was almost a bit of motivation to do it myself this time, just because it was, you know, while I really appreciate everything I learned there, I also wanted to dig deep and had this established team. And they were obviously very, very, it was very touch and go. And they were like, you know, if we get any more progressed than you are going to this place. So I do understand. And I think a lot of these places serve huge purposes for people. And so definitely don't discourage that for people.
Yeah, for sure. So then let's kind of, because we're like, okay, we can be recovered and run again. And you moved to Colorado and that reignited your passion for running. And, but it also very natural in Colorado to then go to the trails, which is kind of where you shifted to as well eventually, and where you found tons of success, and success that is, you know, I would say, I don't want to say like new because you've been a successful runner, but like it's kind of in the stage of like, ooh, you know, like you know, things are building up for you in this trail running space. And you know, a contract with Nike Trail, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't even know that they had a trail subset. So that's
yes,
really cool.
They do. And it's, they're building something really special. That's,
yeah,
I think it's a smaller team. It's a lot smaller of a team. I was with a pretty big team before this, and with Nike Trail, it's, they're really elevating the voices of each person on the team, which I really love. I think that'll make the biggest difference in the sport. But yes, I did find my way to the trails, and I fell head over heels in love, and it just gave me a lot more life and a lot more purpose than I felt like being on the track and the roads was giving me at the time. And now.
This is kind of a totally different question than what we've been talking about, but I'm just curious to know, like, I have this vision in my head of what somebody like you, like in Colorado, like does for their day being a pro athlete. Could you shed some light on the day in the life of Bailey?
Yeah. So a day in the life, it's not all that crazy, but I wake up absurdly early. Naturally, my body alarm clock is somewhere between like 4 and 5.
Oh wow!
Usually, yes, and that's, you know, that's not typical for a lot of humans or professional athletes. So, small disclaimer: you do not have to wake up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, that's
in order
early.
You're a professional athlete.
Yeah,
but that's like, that's my time. That's when I get a lot of coaching done. I get a lot of cleaning done. That's like my Energizer Bunny time. I run around the house with my cup of tea and just enjoy the quiet and the morning. Not even my dog is awake yet.
Yeah.
And then I have breakfast, and my mornings are actually, for waking up super early, my mornings are pretty slow. I don't usually run until about 9 a.m. So I'll eat breakfast around 7. 2 hours is my sweet spot with eating before running. I just feel like it gives me this, like, I feel like I'm digested, but I still have a ton of energy. And
yeah,
so I go for my run around 9, and that's more often than not on the trails or in the mountains. Mm-hmm. We live up in Nederland, which is about 20 minutes above Boulder. So I'll either run some of the secret trails that we have around the house, or I'll drive down to Boulder and run around there. Also more often than not, I run with my dog, Mowgli. He is.
Is it a GSP?
He is a GSP, yes. And I actually, that's something that I want, that I felt like a connection there, but he is the best training partner that I could ever ask for. He's, you know, on those days where running feels a little flat or mundane or not super exciting, he just reminds me why I'm out there. You know, he's like flying around the forest and just loving everything. And
yeah.
It's hard not to smile. Like, I always find myself
smiling. I'm smiling thinking about it. I have two GSPs, and they're just so, their love for running around and being outside is just like, it makes me so happy. which is really difficult on a day that they're stuck with me in the office. It's like really difficult for all of us. But when we get them outside, they're just, oh my gosh, and they're so adorable. And so
they are just the best dogs. Yes, yeah. He is everything I could have ever wanted in a dog pal. But so I'll usually run with him. And then I have been loving matcha lattes lately. So I go to my favorite cafe and I'll get a matcha latte, like a giant matcha latte, and eat a snack there and get some work done. So I'll do some more coaching, checking emails, fun stuff like that at the cafe for a while. And then I'll get lunch. So I'll either go home for lunch, or we have some really fun cafes in Boulder. There's a new Scratch Labs cafe and I get lunch there quite often. There's a lot of athletes that go there. It's really nice to see people and to connect with the community. And let's see, afternoon I'll have some sort of double. So it'll be either a bike double or a run double. And typically if I'm running, I'll do like a net uphill run. I'll have my partner drop me off and then I'll just either run home or something like that. I like to run uphill, especially in the winter. Yeah. And sometimes Mowgli will join for that too. But after that, usually it's just pretty chill. I'll have a snack at home, hang out, get some more work done. Like I kind of have these chunks of time where I get a lot of work done. And then
yeah.
I live in a house with my partner and two other athletes. And we'll usually all eat dinner together, which is quite fun. So we'll all catch up on our days while we're making dinner and then kind of have, you know, either all the same meal or everyone cooks their own meal. And it's quite nice to have that kind of community vibe. And yeah, there's always some good stories told at dinner. And then, and then we'll usually like either watch some sort of show or I'll read a book or do some mobility at the end of the day. And I go to bed pretty early, but
yeah,
that's a typical day in the life.
Oh, sounds so much fun. I want to move there.
It's amazing. Boulder is very, very special. And Colorado definitely holds a really special place in my heart.
And there's so many athletes and outdoor adventure seekers there. And that's why it's like, it's almost like, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like going into town and, you know, having lunch or something. It's like, it just seems like it's more of like what lots of people do there. I don't know if that makes sense. But like, you know, where I am right now, like I'm sure I'm an athlete, but like if I go into town, it's not like everybody's doing a similar thing to me that day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it can be intimidating at first. Like when I first moved to Boulder, I was really intimidated and I almost felt like, oh my gosh, am I an athlete? I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing in this place where, you know, everybody like has a sponsor, but it is amazing. And once you, you know, put yourself in the community and get to know people, it's an amazing place to be.
Yeah. And that was maybe another question I had. There are these pockets of the country that have this focus on, you know, athletic lifestyles, but then it's almost kind of intimidating to move there or live there. Cause it's like, am I a good enough athlete to be living here doing this? One thing that I think is really helpful is for most people to remember is that most people in these communities are super inviting. Like they want you to enjoy the outdoors as much as they do. And at least that's my perception of it. I don't know if you feel the same, but.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing seeing people on trails and doing anything, you know, like I'll see hikers on trails and they'll be like, wow, I'm not running like you. Like that's insane. And what I usually say is I'm like, you're out here. That's all that matters. Yeah. Like you're on the trails, you're enjoying nature and it doesn't matter what that looks like. Like everybody just loves to see people outside. And I think that that's the key. It doesn't need to look a certain way and you don't need to be running a certain pace in order to be period. That's
Yeah. My sister lives in Fort Collins. And so I go to visit her once or twice a year there. And you know, it's very similar of obviously it's not far at all from where you are, but it's just like, it's just, this is the lifestyle of what people do. But at the same time, it's so welcoming and so encouraging and so enabling to get people of all levels and people of all types to, you know, get out there and participate and do that. And so it's fun. Well, Bailey, I can keep chatting with you. It's been so awesome to talk, but I'm going to have to wrap this up. So I end every podcast with the same questions. And I know you think you already know them, right? You've listened, tuned in.
I know most of them.
All right. So if there's one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Smoothie bowl. 100% a smoothie bowl, like a loaded smoothie bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so side story here. I've definitely said that before. I'm like a loaded smoothie or a loaded smoothie bowl before. And then clients have been like, what do you mean by loaded? And I'm just like, you're just loaded up. Like you put everything in there. So what are like some of your favorite things to throw in your smoothie bowls?
Okay, so I'm a big fan of like a chai flavored smoothie bowl. So you start with some sort of milk, any sort of milk, banana, full banana, cinnamon. And I use vanilla plant protein powder, but any like vanilla protein powder works. And then you can add some maple syrup in there. And so that's the base with ice. And then on top, some granola, like, what is it? Dang makes these like roasted coconut chips type of thing. And then, so that's in the middle. And then on the other side, I have been loving, it's called Oat House. It's granola butter. So it's not peanut butter, but it's like nut butter made with granola. It is revolutionary. Yeah. So shout out to Oat House. Blended up granola. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is amazing. So that's my like go-to smoothie bowl. And it is loaded and it's amazing.
I think the nut butters and or granola butters or cookie butters, those exist as well. I think adding those to smoothies and smoothie bowls like really I can't make a smoothie without a nut butter variety in there of some sort anymore.
Exactly. I can't do anything without a nut butter variety. Yeah. So that is my go-to for everything. Just add nut butter and life will be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
Outside of running.
It can be running.
That seems so simple.
I know.
I love to ski outside of running. I love to ski. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Awesome. And we'll throw running in there too because that we know.
Yes, I can't not. It feels so unnatural not to answer that. Running is the number one answer, but skiing's great.
So. Yeah. So how about as a spectator, as a fan, what's your favorite sport to cheer on from the sidelines?
I would say college football. I'm a huge college football fan and I just love it.
Love it. Awesome. And then final question, if there's a female athlete that you want to give a shout out to for being an inspiration and role model for any reason, and this can be someone just well-known in your personal life or well-known kind of more publicly, who would that be and why?
This one's tough. I knew it was coming and I have like four different answers depending on what mood I was in. I think it would be Dom Scott, the Roadrunner. I mean, mostly because she's somebody that, you know, she comes from she comes from a different world than me. She's pro on the roads. She's training on the roads with the Boss Hard Group here. And to me, you know, like she probably doesn't know who I am in the trail world, but every time I see her out there, it's a huge smile, a huge wave. And she's just always been an inspiration to me. She's, you know, she's super fast, super kind. And I'm just really inspired by her.
Yeah. I love that. So shout out to Dom for being an inspirational female athlete. And thank you so much, Bailey, for sharing your story and being kind of somebody who is actively advocating and being an inspirational person to other girls and women and athletes as well. So we're excited to continue to watch your journey and your races coming up. I know spring and summer is typically like a big season for your races. So we'll be following along.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and keep being awesome. I am so inspired by you and the work that you do. And it's really, it does not go unnoticed. Let's just say that.
Thank you so much. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out, and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.